Kevin J. Johnston here, everybody. Thank you very, very much for being here. Tonight's show is evidence of global COVID-19 fraud with that phenomenal woman that you've all been asking me about, Christine Massey. You saw her speak downtown Toronto. Yes, you did. And she did a great job doing it. The information that she had was mind-numbing. And of course, I was so excited. I watched every single word she said, because everything she was saying is either in my book, Masks Are Bullshit, or it was stuff that I was reading and decided to pass over for the book, because, you know, printing more than 250 pages in a book is really expensive. So I had to do some editing, and I could not resist. I could not take the Justin Trudeau jokes or the Bonnie Crombie jokes out of the book. They had to stay. But before we get going, I just want to say thank you very much to Streetsville Tire in Mississauga at 6295 Mississauga Road, obviously in Mississauga, attached to and directly behind the Service Ontario building, which is formerly known as the MTO. Let me tell you something about these guys here. All right. I talked to this mechanic. It's a guy. His name is Colin, and his wife, Red. They're phenomenal people. This guy, I'm talking to him, and he starts spewing off of the gums about COVID-19, about government structure, about economics, and the whole bit. And I'm thinking, this guy knows more than me. Are you sure you're a mechanic and maybe not a radio personality? Wonderful people, absolutely honest. And just for the record, I am not getting paid for this. I decided instead to show these people's business, show you who they are, and tell you a bit about them, because for the first time ever, at least for the last year, I made a phone call and they answered the phone. And then I left a message later in the day, and I got a call back. Unheard of. Absolutely unheard of. So thank you, Colin. Thank you, Red, for being phenomenal people. Let's get right into this. Christine Massey is with me right now. Let's turn her microphone on and let's put her up on the screen. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. You look great. Tell everybody who you are, please.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me. I'm Christine Massey. I lived most of my life in Brampton until just a few months ago. I'm 52 years old. I have a grown son and a daughter-in-law. Like everybody else, I'm very concerned where things are heading with this COVID-19 business. I have a master's degree in biostatistics from University of Toronto. And several months ago, I started learning about a really fundamental issue with the alleged virus. And I started looking into it deeper and eventually started collecting some evidence that I hope is going to help in lawsuits, maybe possibly around the world, and yeah, help us get out of this mess.
Well, I was watching you speak downtown Toronto. You're standing beside Lamont from the line, and you had a boatload of information to share. And what was interesting is people were going away from the rah, rah, rah speakers to you speaking like a doctor. Now, I know you're not a doctor, but you were still speaking like one, issuing a lot of phenomenal stats and very serious information that everybody was really intently listening to, obviously, including myself. And then you and I chatted on YouTube live. And what did YouTube do? They heard your voice mention the words COVID pandemic, probably scam. And they pulled the video automatically and gave me a channel strike, which is fine. Who cares? YouTube sucks. All right, let's get into it. What do you want people to know about COVID-19 / coronavirus, novella coronavirus, as the hospitals call it?
Yeah, SARS-CoV-2. I mean, in a nutshell, what I'll be sharing with you is basically there's no scientific evidence whatsoever for the existence of this alleged virus. It's based purely on fraudulent science and fraudulent tests and fraudulent diagnoses. The statistics are utterly meaningless. They literally do not have proof that the virus exists. And we can delve into that and tell you the details. I know it sounds maybe remarkable to people who haven't heard that before, but it's actually not that difficult to show. At least that's why I obtained these documents, was to help it and simplify it so that people could see what I was saying was true, what other people are saying too. So,
okay, well, let's get into that, because one of the things that I've said, and I've come under fire from the left for it, and who cares about them, but they've stated to me that yes, there is a genome, and what they'll do is they'll show me little green circles on a pie chart. And then they'll say, yes, it has been isolated. And I keep asking, could I please see the paper? Show me which doctors, real doctors, have put their names on this. And obviously they can't. So has this thing been isolated, and has the genome been broken down and entered into the viral records?
No. So it hasn't been isolated. And that would be the first step if you were going to do some legitimate science, would be to look in a patient sample. And there would be other steps. You wouldn't go straight to the microscope. There would be filtration and centrifuging the sample to get down to the weed out the larger bits and pieces. But that was never done. So that would be, there's something called Koch's postulates that were taught for many years in schools, universities. And it was accepted as the way of determining if there's a new microbe that's causing disease. And so there are all these papers that have been published where in the title and in the abstract, it will say that they isolated the virus. And this is where they've made it difficult for people, which I would say was done intentionally, saying that they isolated the virus. So that's where you get into all these arguments with people. I mean, I've spent hours and hours and hours, like so many other people have, on Twitter, having these discussions and basically discussing the methods that were used to show, no, it wasn't isolated. They're using that word, but they're abusing the word. They're abusing the English language. And the only reason for using that word is to give the impression that they did that very important step in Koch's postulates, where if you or I are told to self-isolate because we had a positive PCR test, that actually means nothing. But if we were told by public health officials to self-isolate, we all know what that would mean. They would want us to stay by ourselves. They don't want us calling our friends and our aunts and uncles and everybody over and having a party, right? They want us by ourselves. And that's the same, that's the English meaning of the word isolate. And that's what it meant in Koch's postulates too. It was to get the thing by itself, because once you get it by itself, it's not contaminated with anything else. And then you can go ahead and do experiments. But if you have something that's contaminated, or you haven't even checked, you don't even know if the sample you're dealing with even has this virus in there, then anything you do with it, it's just ridiculous, right? You don't have any scientific control. You can't draw conclusions. You don't know what's causing what to happen.
Okay. With that in mind, this term isolate that you're talking about, obviously they're messing with our heads. Obviously they want to see if that we're going to do what we're told. They want to find out who the dissenters are, what I guess the demographic of people are who will dissent, who will ignore them. And it looks like it's everybody, every race, creed, color, and intelligence level is dissenting because we're sick of it. This term isolation, though, could you pinpoint where it came from, at what point in the last 8 months that they actually decided to go with the term isolate, and then state also that they isolated the virus?
It's been happening from the beginning. There have been papers coming out continually saying that they isolated, and then they SARS-CoV-2 isolated from the first COVID-19 patient in Korea or Australia or what have you. So there's always been these papers coming out using that word. And I think it's not even something that's unique to COVID-19. It's not like the first time that this has been done.
Okay.
So that's something to know. This is something that's been going on for quite some time. So then, like I said, you get people who even at probably people with good intentions and doctors and scientists, often people will just look at the title of a paper. They take a quick read of the abstract and they trust that it's giving them an accurate description of what was done in the paper. Where in fact, if you delve into the actual methods and read, you go, wait a minute, this has nothing to do with isolating anything. They're doing the opposite. They're actually mixing the sample with contaminants, including genetic contaminants.
Well, tell me something. You mentioned that there's a lot of animal DNA that's being mixed in with this. Why?
Right. So typically what happens is, they call it culturing. So what they're doing, they're basically conflating or confusing some of the steps in Koch's postulates. So ideally, the first step would be that you purify the thing, and then you could introduce it into a dish with human cells and see if it can replicate in the human cells, for example. So what they're doing is combining those two steps into one, which doesn't make any sense at all. They don't do anything to actually find a virus. What they'll typically do is they'll say, well, we have this sample from a COVID-19 positive patient who was confirmed on one of these ridiculous PCR tests. So we can talk about the PCR later too, if you like. I think a lot of people are realizing by now that the PCR tests, they're not.
That's going to be my next question because I want to get your take on it. Yeah.
There's so many issues. What a lot of people are hearing about and talking about are the cycle thresholds, that they're running too many cycles on these PCR tests. But that's only one problem. I mean, that's just scratching the surface of the problems. These PCR tests are not, they don't look for a virus. They're not capable of telling you, no matter what your cycle threshold is, they're not capable of telling you that there's an actual intact virus in the sample. It's nothing of the sort. I don't know if you want me to talk a bit about the PCR right now and then go back.
Let's do that. I'll tell you why, because I've been very adamant on telling everybody about the invention by Kary Mullis, the American chemist who won the Nobel Prize and the Japan Prize for what he did. He shared it with another scientist. But I'm not going to talk. I want you to tell people what you know PCR tests to be. Go ahead.
Okay. So PCR in a nutshell, it was the idea with PCR was, let's say you have a little bit of genetic material and you would like to do some research with it. So and you would like to have more. You only have a tiny bit and you would like to have more copies of it. So that was how PCR was useful. It could be used for research. There are legitimate purposes for using PCR. And apparently there's a whole range of uses, but it wasn't a diagnostic tool. It was not intended for that. And Kary Mullis, who interestingly died just late 2019, just very shortly before this whole pandemic got started, he was vocal about that. He was very clear. This is not a diagnostic tool, partly for the very reason that, like I said, what they do is they'll claim you have a genome of something. You know, maybe you really do. Maybe it's a fabricated genome, which is what we're dealing with SARS-CoV-2. SARS-CoV-2 is the name of the supposed COVID-19 virus. But let's just say, even if you had a real genome for something. Okay. It doesn't identify that whole genome. What it does is they'll pick a tiny, tiny, tiny little segment of that genome to focus in on. And what the technology does is if that segment that they're looking for is in there, it will make copies. And every time they do another cycle, it doubles. And, you know, if you go, you know, you start it with one and then you have two and then four, eight, 16, and it doesn't take very long until you're getting into very high numbers. So that enables them, then there's more to it. But when you have enough copies, then it sends off a signal and then they can detect it at that point. So it's been described as a needle in a haystack technology when you're using it to search for something.
So I just want to get your thoughts, because Kary Mullis, he argued with CNN back in 1994 that CNN stated that the PCR, the polymerase chain reaction, was the ultimate way to detect the AIDS virus, to which he shunned them and said, absolutely not. So do you have any idea how it is that test came to be the one that we're using now in modern times in 2020, after he argued back in 1994 to not use it a year after he invented it?
I haven't delved into the history myself. I'm a very simple person and I needed for myself and my life to simplify this whole thing. So that was why when I learned that the virus had not actually been isolated, I realized this gets to the heart of the whole story that we're being told. And I just kept my focus on that. I started verifying what I had been told, that it hadn't been isolated, by looking at the papers that were saying that they had isolated it. And then I realized it was an opportunity to use the Freedom of Information requests to start gathering evidence that these institutions that are telling us we're in the middle of a pandemic actually can't prove that at all. So I'm not like you, Kevin. I'm not one of these people where I go off in all these different areas, because just from my own mental health. I have to keep it simple and stay focused and I just wanted to stay focused on that issue. So I know it's been used for some time as a diagnostic tool, but it was not intended to be. And apparently Kerry Mullis was very outspoken about that. And he was very upset about it. Yeah, there was a wonderful article published months ago by a lady named Celia Farber, which you may have read. I think a lot of people have seen this one, and it started opening a lot of eyes for a lot of people. She had actually talked to Kerry Mullis at different times over the years. And, you know, she recounted that during one conversation in particular, when they were talking about this technology being weaponized, as she put it, he actually broke down into tears. He was so distraught at what they were doing with his technology.
Well, I want to show this to you. This is what the Australian government has placed on their slide. Now, I do cover this, everybody. This specific label that you're going to see, it's loaded with spelling mistakes. And I just decided to show you verbatim what's being put out. So that is the book there, everybody. Masks Are Bullshit. Go to kevinjjohnson.ca. Donate $20 tonight, and I'll send you the ebook and the audiobook for both this book and Lacrosse Is Dead. So that's $80 worth of digital files you'll get from me. All right, check this label out. This is in the book and my commentary is on it. All right, it says Australian government top left, novella coronavirus COVID-19 top right, information for clinicians, frequently asked questions. In quotation here, you can see me on this side, in quotation marks, it should be noted that PCR tests cannot distinguish between live virus and non-infective RNA. Christine, can I get you to break down that sentence first? And then we're going to go back to the rest of what's on there.
Okay. So for them to do the PCR tests, I'm not an expert on PCR by any stretch of the imagination, but they have to, first they'll take the sample and they'll add a chemical that causes all the like cell membranes to break down and release all the genetic material. So basically you end up with this soup of genetic material from who knows what, right? You have cells and there could be viruses, you know, who knows what viruses and bacteria and fungi, there could be all sorts of things.
Could there be things like amoeba and other living cells too?
Yeah, like whatever might be in the sample, it's going in there, all that genetic material. And then what they do is they use that PCR technology to make, they put in some things called primers and probes. And basically, it'll hone in on the segment that you're looking for, and it will make copies of it if it's in there. So the way they use this is if they get enough copies that they get a signal, and so they detect that this little segment is in there, they'll call it positive. There's more details to it because you have to make a decision as to how many cycles will you run before you decide it's not there. At some point, you have to give up and say, okay, well, we still haven't found it yet. We'll call that a negative
Hold on.
Yes.
You mean they just keep trying until they get a positive? Is that what you're saying?
No, they shouldn't keep trying until they get a positive. But different protocols, like one protocol might say, okay, we're going to go to a maximum of 25 cycles. And if we don't find it by 25, we're going to call it a negative. And then another lab might go up to 27, and another lab 29, and another lab 34, and another lab 39, right? Whole range. And apparently some labs are even going up to 45, even though there are experts saying, you know, you really shouldn't go over 25. And everyone seems to agree that anything over 35 is just completely ridiculous. Even Anthony Fauci has said that. So, and that's another aspect of how all these stats, it's just completely ridiculous because every PC protocol, there's so many different protocols out there. It's not like everybody's finding the same thing. Even these little segments that they look for, which is not a full virus, it's just a tiny, tiny, tiny little sequence that they say is part of the genome of the virus. Then you learn that the genomes were actually fabricated. They're not actually even legitimate genomes. But even if it was a legitimate genome and you did know that, in fact, there was a real virus, which we don't, but even if there was, you can't use this for diagnosing because all you're detecting is there's this little bit of something that might have been from the virus, or it might have been from something else. You don't know. The PCR technology, it can't tell you where this teeny little segment came from. But this is how it's such a con. Like it's not fit for diagnostic purpose, even if it was a real virus. So I always say this is criminal. It's fraudulent. Even if you had proven that this virus does exist and you did know its genome, which has not ever happened, but even if you did, this is not a way of diagnosing anything. You cannot confirm anything with this.
No, you can't. It just seems like in this petri dish, you know, they can drop whatever they want into it. And if they want to ramp the numbers up, I don't think they're going to stop at 25. I think they'll go to 45 and just keep trying, because they want the case numbers to be higher, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I got to move into the next part of this label, which kind of confirms what you and I are saying here. Not kind of, it does. All right. So it says in the middle, this means the test cannot distinguish. Look at the language on this. Cannot distinguishing COVID from a cold or measles or Ebola. Now I'm going to drop down to the pink box. Notable human diseases caused by RNA viruses include Ebola virus disease, SARS, COVID-19, rabies, common cold, influenza, hepatitis C, hepatitis E, West Nile fever, polio, and measles. Like, we're talking stuff that's not even related to each other. And it detects all of this. So go ahead.
So what happens is different labs will look for different sequences. And for example, if you go to Public Health Ontario's website, you'll see 5 or 6 different sequences that they can look for. So a common one is called the E gene. And then there's the N gene and the RDRP gene. And there's a 2 or 3 others that they talk about on Public Health Ontario's website. And it says right there, anybody can go to their website and find the COVID-19 testing PCR webpage. And it has quite a bit of information there. Now, with regard to the cycle numbers, it says there, the last I checked, that anything over 37 is considered indeterminate. Not even, I don't know at what point they decide negative, but what it says there is anything over 37 is negative. So they're using very high cycle numbers at Public Health Ontario, such that even if you had a real virus and you knew the real genome, it would still be ridiculous and not a valid test. And then they talk about, like I was saying, one of the sequences is the E gene. And I'll share with you, there was actually something really interesting that happened a few days ago. Public Health Ontario's protocol, you can find this right on that webpage that I mentioned, it gives you a link if you would like to know more details about the protocol that they use. And if you click on that link, it takes you to a document on the World Health Organization's website. And it's a protocol that was written by some people, Christian Drosten and Victor Corman and a few other people. And it's this protocol came out, they had published a paper on January 23rd in a journal called Eurosurveillance. And the name of the paper was Detection of 2019 Novel Coronavirus. And then in brackets, it says 2019 nCoV, because that's what they had called it originally, by real-time RT-PCR. Okay, so that paper, the protocol that came out of that is used in many labs around the world, not necessarily all of them, but it's the basis for a lot of the PCR protocols. And apparently it's not specific enough. There's still a lot of variation in what people are doing with this protocol because it didn't hammer down all the details. What happened just a few days ago was a group of 22 scientists in the life sciences, they have published a report, and you can go to their website that they set up. It's Corman, Corman, Drosten, Drosten, review.com. So Corman, Drosten, review.com. And these 22 scientists have published a review, their own peer review, and they've identified what they call 10 major flaws with this paper, and they're asking for it to be retracted. So this is actually huge news with regards to the PCR testing that's going on around the world.
Right.
You have 22 scientists saying this is 10 major flaws that they have identified. and they're asking for it to be retracted. And they're not even going into the fact that, oh, and by the way, this virus is still not isolated. They acknowledge that that paper was written, and it says right in the paper, anybody can look up the original paper. They admitted in that paper that they started working on their protocol based on social media reports coming out of China. There was not even, before there was even a confirmed, supposedly confirmed virus. And then it also says in that paper that when they started designing the test, because they didn't have any actual virus to test their test with to see how well it worked.
Okay.
What they used for their validation, they used some supposed 2003 SARS. And I say supposed because I would, it turns out that the 2003 SARS virus was also never isolated. So
what?
Yes.
No,
I know it's,
really?
It's so much to take in all at once. And I'm going to direct people before we finish to some amazing presentations where you can get a much more clear cut explanation. But anyway, so they had stored, supposedly it was 2003 SARS virus. So a different virus from what we're dealing with now. That was one of the things that they used to test the PCR protocol with. And then the other thing that they used, again, because they didn't have real SARS-CoV-2, which is supposedly this new virus that we're dealing with, they use synthetic RNA to represent that virus. It's right in their paper. I mean, I don't make this up. It's just right there in their publication.
But synthetic, if they're making synthetic RNA,
yeah,
they're replicating something. What were they replicating to make it synthetic?
So they can make the RNA the way they want it to represent these little sequences that they say they're going to look for. So they can make it artificially, and then they put that into a sample and do the PCR test, and then they can see, okay, did we detect it or not? How, you know, what was our sensitivity for detecting it? So this is what they use. It's right there in their paper. It's, you know, they say right in within the abstract, I believe, that it's a diagnostic. They call it a robust. They actually had the nerve to call it a robust diagnostic tool for, I forget the exact wording, but they say in the absence of having a natural virus.
Okay.
And then they congratulate themselves. There's other parts in the paper where they talk about the intended cross-reactivity. So they're telling you right in the paper, they were glad that all of the assays, meaning, you know, you could look for the E gene, or you could look for the N gene, or you could look for the RDRP gene, and all these different assays, they were happy that it would cross-react with other viruses, which, because it saved them the trouble of having to have an actual SARS-CoV-2 virus.
So they're using, let's recap
yeah.
that. Now my head's exploding, and I'm the guy that professes to be, you know, having researched this for a year, and now you've just given me information I didn't know. So they were utilizing synthetic RNA replicated from somewhere, and they were using little bits and pieces from other viruses just so that they could have something to show, I guess, the people that fund them. Is that what it is?
Well, there's been some information coming out. One of the interesting things is one of the authors of this paper, if I remember correctly, I think it's Drosten, or it could be Corman. I'm sorry. There's a bunch of other authors too, but I think it's Drosten. One of them, he is actually on the, you know how a peer-reviewed journal would always have an editorial board? So one of them is actually on the editorial board, which is kind of interesting. And there's financial ties as well. So, and you can imagine with all these tests going on around the world, there's people making an awful lot of money. And so there's some financial issues going on there too. Sorry, I don't know if I answered your question or
no, it's okay.
Went off on a tangent there.
It's like, no, with Occam's razor, you know, the theory that the simplest explanation tends to be the truest. Obviously, you follow the money here. And I think someone is getting greased to go out of their way and cook up false positives, or at least a false positive on a test to prove that the test could be worked for other false positives. And that's the part that bothers me the most, is that everything is predicated upon the lie. First off, the lie that the PCR test is the right one to use. And then secondly, to get the reactions that they were looking for, they had to fake everything. It wasn't just they faked the end result. They faked everything from start to middle to finish. Well,
it was insane. The amazing thing is they were open about it. Like, it's right there on their paper and it got published, and they had the nerve though to refer to it as a robust technology. So these 22 scientists who are asking for the retraction, that's the first major flaw that they identify, is the fact that the authors of this paper did not, and today, as of today, still have not ever tested out how well the technology works with an actual virus, with an actual SARS-CoV-2 virus. And I'll just throw in one more detail, just so people tuck this in the back of your head. So that Christian Drosten, he was also involved in the 2003 SARS, in the paper that put out the idea that, it looks like we might have found this new coronavirus. And he was involved in the PCR testing then as well. Okay. So, yeah, interesting. And he's being sued. So I want to give people some good news here too, because so much information is coming out. There's just so much information coming out, and it's so damning, and it's getting right to the heart of things. So a lot of people realize now this PCR is just completely ridiculous. It's not a valid way of testing. A lot of people are starting to realize we don't even have a proven virus. And I probably, some of your viewers are familiar with Rocco Galati, that there's a lawsuit going on here. Yeah. He was hired by Vaccine Choice Canada. And sorry, I'm blanking out on his name. Help me. Sorry, never mind. Anyway, sorry. And there's this amazing Dr. Rainer Fulmich. He's a lawyer in both Germany and California. And apparently there's legal teams around the world that are working together and sharing information. And this Dr. Rainer Fulmich, a lot of people have seen one of the early videos he put out. The title was Crimes Against Humanity. And he's a very strong speaker. And he is suing Drosten, if I remember correctly. Christian Drosten. I think he's going to have a hard time showing his face anywhere in public one of these days.
Good. Very good.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. So there's some light.
Sorry to cut you off there, Christina. First off, everybody, if you look above Christina's head right now, you'll see her Twitter handle is a little complicated, but please follow her. Get on a Twitter and follow now, because she will be continuing to give out good information and awesome links to what you need to see. And I informed Christina today that she can change that handle. Once a month, Twitter lets you change the handle. So I'll work with you to get that changed, make it simpler. But in the meantime, screenshot that. Go follow her right now, please, because the information is not going to stop. So let's get into the whole vaccine thing here. Bill Gates wants everyone to have a vaccine. However, he wants us to have a vaccine for a virus that A, has not been isolated, B, has no genome, and C, does not exist. What is he putting in these vaccines that we should be worried about? What do you think is going to be there?
Yeah, we're hearing a lot about this new technology that's never been, there has been no product on the market before with this, mRNA. I'm not looking into it very much because I get too upset. I can't handle all this information. I just try to stay focused on collecting the evidence that I've been able to collect. But I know there's a lot of amazing information coming out about those vaccines. Any time they tried to make coronavirus vaccines in the past, apparently the results were just disastrous. And, you don't have the mainstream media informing you of that. I sat in months ago in a webinar hosted by the University of Toronto, which I'm really quite disgusted with, even though that's where I did my undergrad and my master's degree. They hosted a webinar months ago about the development of a COVID-19 vaccine, and listening to them, it was just all sunshine and butterflies. And, aren't we so lucky that this is coming? And it was just like a sales pitch. And I was so completely disgusted with them, knowing what I knew. I thought about burning, I might burn my degree one day on camera or something, or send it back to them.
Don't do it alone. No, we will have a big party. We will form a party. It'll be great. We're going to invite 100 people out and then torch it. And we'll do it with something like a welding torch.
You know, let's
like
we'll do it. There might be other people will join us too. Maybe some cell phones too. We'll get rid of some of our cell phones. Rocco always says to do that with their cell phones.
That's a serious offer, everybody. So if anybody wants to burn their degrees, you know what? I'll even bring out my 2 degrees I talked about earlier tonight. I'll torch them too because they mean nothing. freedomreport.ca@gmail.com. That's my public email address. Anyone's allowed to email me there. Of course, if you're foolish, I'll block you. But if you're serious about torching your useless piece of paper from your useless university, let's make it a party. All right. An absolute party. Okay. Thank you for suggesting it. I like the way you think.
I think it'd be fun. Would you mind if I mention something else about U of T?
You go right ahead. This is your
time. Thank you. Okay, so I mentioned this on Saturday, but I'll mention it again. And I'm sure not everybody heard me talk on Saturday. So, and we didn't really get into the Freedom of Information requests yet. But what I've been doing is I've been collecting formal letters from institutions around Canada, and then other people started helping me to collect them from other countries as well. I'm jumping around, but I'll first explain. So Freedom of Information, it's a process that's available, probably in most countries, maybe every country, but it's a legislative process where if you can request of the government documents that they might have or records more generally. And in some places you can also ask for information, so meaning you could pose a question and they're supposed to answer it for you. As far as I know in Canada, or at least the legislation I've dealt with here in Ontario and at the federal level, it's been in terms of records. So if you know or suspect that there's a certain record that the government holds, could be a document or a video or an audio recording or microfilm or whatever, you can request it. And then there's a certain process where they have to respond in a certain amount of time and blah, 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 to try to ensure that you get what you asked for. There's certain exemptions, of course. So I've been collecting these documents from around Canada because what I saw was, you know, I was learning from these brilliant people. I'd like to name a few of them too, but people like Dr. Andrew Kaufman, the great investigative reporter John Rappaport, Canada's David Crowe. We had a brilliant, great Canadian hero. I think he was an angel here on earth. His name was David Crowe, and maybe a lot of people might not have heard of David Crowe yet, but he had a podcast called The Infectious Myth. And for years, he was revealing and exposing just exactly the kind of information we're talking about now, because like I said, this kind of thing didn't just get started. So he was exposing that sort of thing for years. He had all sorts of expert guests on, and we just lost him in July as well, unfortunately. But I was learning from all these brilliant people. There's others as well. And so I said, you know what? Okay, I'll start looking at these studies for myself and do my due diligence. So, you know, you're arguing with people on Twitter and they say, yes, it's been isolated. And they fire off some links to studies, you know, and I would look at them. And, you know, but you have to go to the methods. You can't just read the title and you can't just go by the abstract. You have to find the methods section where they talk about what did they actually do. And that's when you start finding, oh, okay. So what they actually did was they took the sample and they put it with the monkey kidney cells. Usually it's monkey kidney cells and they're called Vero cells. So if you see Vero with a capital V-E-R-O, those are actually monkey kidney cells. So there's monkey kidney cells usually, and then fetal bovine serum. And sometimes usually you'll see the fetal bovine serum mentioned explicitly, but it can also be sort of hidden. So what happens in a lot of these studies is they'll take the sample from the patient, and then when they go to do their isolation work, that's done at a different location. It'll be done at a lab. So the first thing they do when they get the sample, they store it in something called viral transport medium.
Okay.
So my colleague, I have a colleague who helps quite a lot in New Zealand, Michael S. And so he searched out the CDC, the U.S. Center for Disease Control. They have a standard operating procedure document where they tell you how to go about, they give you advice on how to go about making virus transport medium. So the ingredients are in there, and it's a mineral solution and fetal bovine serum. So fetal meaning from a fetus.
Yeah.
Bovine meaning a cow,
right.
So a baby cow.
Why?
Yeah, that? So the fetal bovine serum, I believe it's to provide nutrients. I don't know a whole lot about the whys of what they do, but that is, so as soon as they, and there's also toxic drugs, so antibiotic and antifungal. So they take the sample from the patient and right away they put it in the viral transport medium usually, which contains those things. So there's genetic contamination happening right away. I think I'm jumping around a lot. Sorry about that.
No. I'll just recap it for everybody here is that they make this concoction. Like it's more like a cocktail of nonsense. And then they mix it with a couple of cocktails of animal DNA to be able to transport it, I guess they say safely. And then at the end of the day, the result is going to be the same idea as taking, a whiskey sour and a Bloody Caesar, mix them together and you try to separate everything later. The only thing you're going to get out of that that's going to be intact is the celery stalk from the Bloody Caesar. I get what you're saying. It's brutal.
It's brutal. Yeah. They mix all these things together and then they wait a few days and they wait to see that harm happens to the monkey cells. And when the harm happens to the monkey cells, they conclude that that was the virus that caused the harm. And because they had a PCR test, you see. They knew that the virus was in there and they knew that it was the virus that caused the harm to the monkey kidney cells. And usually there's some work with sequencing done as well. And if you look into that part, you see that they're actually fabricating these genomes and none of it makes any sense. It's not logical. It's not even a little bit logical. And they call this, and at some point they conclude that they isolated the virus and they'll take some of this mixture and that's what they call their SARS-CoV-2 isolate that gets used in developing new tests or testing therapeutics or developing vaccines. So yeah, like you're saying, they haven't isolated it. And
it's not been isolated. And to summarize everything you just said, they don't know what this is. That's what I think. That's what I'm getting from this.
Right.
But told us that they know. And then the average cashier at, Miracle Food Mart. Oh, they don't exist anymore. Sobeys or, Shoppers Drug Mart. Or if you're in the States, Publix or Piggly Wiggly, they're yelling at you saying, where's your mask? Because we're in a pandemic. And so we've been lied to right from the beginning, it seems, about everything. And we're still being lied to now.
You're still being lied to. So sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
No, you got my train of thought going. Oh, I lost my train of thought too. Because now I'm mad. Go ahead.
Back to University of Toronto. So I started doing the Freedom of Information requests, and I started with Health Canada, and I have a list. I don't know if you want me to go through it again, but 10 different institutions so far in Canada have admitted they have no record of actual isolation of the virus because I worded my request. So I put in a request saying I would like any records describing the isolation of this SARS-CoV-2 virus, but I specified exactly what I meant by isolation because I wanted to weed out all those fraudulent studies. I call it fraudulent monkey business when they're doing all this other stuff and they're calling it isolation. I just say that's fraudulent monkey business. So I explained, I'm not talking about culturing. I'm not talking about PCR tests. I'm not talking about sequencing. I'm looking for that first step where they separated the supposed virus from everything else. And then you can take it from there and see if they did the experiments, but they never even get to that point. So one of the institutions that that I sent a request to was, there's four of them. It's University of Toronto, Sunnybrook Health Sciences Center, McMaster University, and Mount Sinai Hospital, Toronto. And the reason I wanted to highlight those four is because those institutions claimed that researchers had jointly isolated the virus. Researchers from each of those four institutions had worked together. They put out press releases. There was a news report in the National Post. This is going back months. I think it was back in March that they had said that they had isolated the virus from a patient here in Canada. So that's why I wanted to highlight University of Toronto and just let everybody know. And at least once a week or a few times a week, someone will send me one of these press releases where they were bragging about, the researchers, and you see photos of some of them and saying that, patting themselves on the back, all very proud of their great accomplishment that they isolated the virus, supposedly. Well, I have Freedom of Information responses from all four of those institutions saying that they have no record of real isolation of the supposed virus.
But when they released these statements, these public statements, that they had isolated that? Who authorized the individual universities to do so?
Yeah, I guess someone at the, I don't know exactly who would authorize those things, but certainly the researchers themselves are involved. I mean, they, you know, they give quotes from these researchers. And yeah, somebody at the university would be interesting to find out exactly who is responsible.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, yeah, and it was interesting because you could actually, even in the one thing that tipped me off in the National Post report, it was kind of funny. I think it was that reporter. It was one of the press releases, and they were saying how their initial attempt didn't work and they had to use some other scientific tricks. And you start reading between the lines and you realize they're not even talking about isolating anything. You know, you can kind of figure it out even from the news report. But we got the documents to prove it. So that was the whole point of doing the documents, was to save people like myself who, you know, we're starting to learn about these things and we're not experts, and most people don't have time to go looking for all these studies and read them for themselves and see what was actually done. And I had used freedom of information in the past with, I worked on water fluoridation for years, and I had asked government institutions for any study to show that fluoride exposure during pregnancy was actually safe with respect to the IQ and ADHD symptoms of children, because there was a lot of evidence building that perhaps it was not safe. So I got responses from 9 different institutions saying that they didn't have any study whatsoever to show that it was safe during pregnancy after all these decades of saying safe and effective. So that's why I saw, oh, okay, here's another opportunity. I can use the freedom of information to show that there's no records of isolation. And that way it helps build evidence that here's Health Canada, blah, 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 blah. And yet they don't have anything. Health Canada, I haven't checked lately, but the last I checked months ago, they had already authorized dozens of clinical trials for vaccines and different types of COVID-19 products, right? And they were also the ones, it's Health Canada that authorizes the test kits. And yet they never troubled themselves to find out that this virus was actually isolated. Sometimes people say, oh, it's not their job, blah, blah, blah. You know, that would be Public Health Agency of Canada. Well, isn't it interesting that Public Health Agency of Canada, I submitted a request, the same request to them on June 13th, and I'm still waiting for a response. So
June 13th. So we're almost 6 months down. They haven't responded to you yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're coming up on the 1 hour mark here. So are there any concluding statements that you'd like to make about COVID-19 or novella coronavirus or SARS-CoV-2 or whatever name they've given this fake thing, as far as I'm concerned?
Yeah. I just, my message, it's, to me, it's very simple. There's just no evidence. I challenge anybody to prove me wrong, to produce a study where this, you know, this first, even just this first one step was done anywhere on the planet. Because when we request these documents from Health Canada or University of Toronto or Public Health Agency of Canada or the Ministry of Health, which also doesn't want to respond to me, and we make it clear, we're not just asking for something maybe where you yourself isolated. We're saying any record of it being isolated anywhere in the world by anyone. And they have nothing. So I challenge anyone, if you want to try to prove us wrong, go for it, you know, because 39 institutions around the world have all failed. And that includes the US CDC. It includes the European CDC. It's not exactly called CDC, but it's something very similar. It includes Public Health England, Public Health Wales, Public Health Scotland, Ministry of Health in New Zealand, and Department of Health in Australia, and just on and on and on. So, so if you don't have that, you don't have proof the virus exists. You certainly don't have proof of a pandemic. What we have is fraud, fraudulent science, fraudulent tests, fraudulent diagnoses, public health fraud across the board. And what they've done is distract from real disease, like whatever really is going on, which, you know, can be a different thing in each person. Every person needs to be looked at individually to figure out what's going on with them. It could be air pollution in one place. It could be, you know, something in the diet is off. It could, there's any number, all the things that people always got sick from, but they've distracted us from all of that real problems and real solutions, and want us to just think about COVID 24/7. And of course, like you said, mask and social distance and get ready for your vaccine. So obviously this is something we have to resist. And, you know, I'm sure you have guests too that could talk about the agenda that's actually behind all this, why they would do this and want to control us and strip us of our humanity and have children wearing masks. And I just want to mention, you know, my friend is sitting here. I live with a good friend, and you know, God bless her. She has children, and you know, her daughter is like 14, and you know, I'm getting choked up now because you know, one of her daughter's friends tried to commit suicide recently, and she's saying like half of them are suicidal because they're growing up in such a fucked up world. You know, it was already pretty fucked up, right? There are a lot of weird things going on, but all these children and seeing children going around with masks. You know, I don't have to tell you and your viewers all the just fucking atrocities that are going on in the name of this bullshit pandemic. So, you know, I just,
I'm sorry
I challenge anyone. What's that? Sorry.
I'm sorry to hear it. And, you know, it's bothering me to no end as well, because I've been around youth my whole life. I've coached youth sports, hockey, soccer, lacrosse, swimming, rock climbing. I've been around a lot of kids a lot of the time, and I know how easy it is to build them up through kind words and keeping them busy. And I know how easy it is to tear them down with bad words and insults and whatnot. But I'm seeing the end result of this as well. A lot of really depressed kids. And unfortunately, what we have here are there's going to be an absolute onslaught of kids killing themselves for this whole thing. So I'm wondering, you know, could all of you out there, could you please listen to what Christina's just said? And tell your kids to take the damn mask off. Just take it off. There's no fines. You're not getting tickets for it. And if you do, you can sue the city and make money. You're going to get paid if they hit you with these tickets. Call me. Contact me and contact the rebel. We will fight you, help you fight these things.
Oh. Amen. Amen. Thank you. Speak now. Share the information. Share it. I challenge anyone to prove us wrong, and just learn, educate yourself, stand up for yourself. Don't be shy to assert your right, like Kevin's saying, to not wear a mask, or, you know, and for fuck's sake, like, just do whatever we want at Christmas time. You know, like, let's have a normal Christmas. That's really what I'm projecting is normal. Amen. Christmas. This bullshit's going to be over. The truth is on our side. It's actually really simple when you learn it, right? So it's actually not that complicated. I'm not the best person to teach it, but go to my website. It's fluoridefreepeel.ca, and you can type in FOIS and find all these documents. And then at the bottom of that page, it'll say, so what the hell is going on? And if you click there, it takes you to another page, and it's got all from people who are much better than me at explaining these things with brilliant presentations and brilliant articles and screenshots from Public Health Ontario's website. So you don't have to go and find these things. And I did it for myself too. So that way, when I'm trying to remember to share something with somebody, I have a lot of evidence right there in one place. Great articles, great presentations, and just lots of bits of information like Kevin was showing you. From that Australian document, it says right there that the PCR test can't distinguish between an actual virus and non-infective RNA. There's a similar document saying the exact same thing from the CDC. There's other damning things that you'll just look at it and you go, oh my God, and they're telling you right there, actually, it's like in black and white. So it's really not that hard to figure out. And I tried to make it easy so people can just go and find that information, share it with other people, send it to your representatives and let them know, I know this is fucking fraud, you know, and we're not going along with this anymore. So yeah. And we're going to end this. We're going to put an end to it. It's going to be done soon.
We certainly are. And everyone out there who's watching knows that I'm running for mayor of Calgary right now. And that is part of my campaign. You're going back to work. Shops are going to open up. You're taking your mask off. And we're going to finally tell the people of Alberta, at least I can do it in Alberta, that this thing is a fraud and that you need to start suing Jason Kenney and every one of your leaders immediately. And this is something else that I'll be dealing with all next week. I'm going to tell you all how to punish your politicians for this. Christina, it's been wonderful. And thank you for taking the time to talk with me downtown Toronto and again in Mississauga and again tonight. It's been great hearing from you. Thank you for this.
Thank you so much. God bless.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you. That's Christina Massey, everybody. You know, what we'll do here is we're going to get back to me here, and I'm going to reflect on everything that she has said. And that is, you're damn right. You go and you have your Christmas break. You invite as many people as you want over. If the police or bylaw officers come to your front door, you simply, ready for this? Here's how you deal with it. You step outside of your house. You close the door behind you. You do not let them in. They'll ask, may we come in? The answer is always, no, you may not. Then they'll ask you questions such as, how many people are inside? And you tell them, I do not answer questions. Please leave. You don't have to be vulgar or crass or scream or anything else. You just tell them to leave. Have as many people over as you want. I'm going to tell you the truth here. Since January, with all this nonsense that's taken place, how many people do you think that I've been around? Think about every single protest that I've been to. Think about every single indoor party that I've gone to. Think about all the restaurants that I've gone to. Think about me being on airplanes a couple of times. Think about me having been in the following cities: Toronto, Vaughan, Mississauga, Oakville, Hamilton, Burlington, Niagara Falls, Niagara-on-the-Lake, Montreal, Quebec City, Trois-Rivières, Ottawa, all the surrounding areas there, Kanata, Gloucester, so on. Calgary, Red Deer, Edmonton, Banff. There's a few others, like all the small towns around there. Nothing. I'm not sick. Think about all the men and women I've hugged because I'm into this whole thing with Vladimir and hugs over masks. Everybody that wants a hug gets one. Everybody who wants a high five gets one. Everybody who wants a handshake gets one. You got to think about this. If I shake hands with over 2,000 people over the course of about 7 hours when I'm downtown, that includes the high fives and the actual handshakes and you know, the tops and the bottoms. Think about all those hands that I touch and then all those hands that go out and touch other hands. And I'm not sick. That's a lot of hands that I'm touching. There's a lot of kisses that come here, all over the place, sometimes there. Think about that. I'm not sick. Do I look sick to you? Do I sound sick to you? Do I in any way, shape, or form look unhealthy to you? And we all know that the answer is no. And I'm going to continue sticking my face in everybody else's face who wants it there. And I'm going to stick my face in the face of politicians and bylaw officers who don't want it there. And if they don't want me within 6 feet of them, they can do something foolish like assault me, in which case I will call 911 and then place them under citizen's arrest for assault. I'm not putting up with this, and nor should any of you. You've seen how emotional a woman in her 50s can be when we get through all this information and she realizes, oh my God, I've just given you all this information, but I still have to deal with friends of my daughter and friends of my daughter-in-law and friends of my niece who are suicidal because they're being forced to put Chinese paper on their face, diapers on their face. They're being told they can't go to school. You can't graduate. You can't go to the trampoline centers. You can't go to nightclubs. You can't hang out with your friends. You can't even smoke a bong in your own garage because we will send out the police or bylaw officers to fine you. And I can tell you something that I do know about bylaw officers in the city of Mississauga. And I know they're watching. They're all cowards. Each and every one of you is gutless. You're wimps. Each and every one of you is a complete and total pussy. I get it. You got picked on when you were little, and now it's your turn to go and pick on people. Well, what do you do when someone's not afraid? I know what you do. You call the police saying, this Kevin J. Johnston guy, he's not afraid. What do I do? Would you please come by with guns and try to intimidate him? And you did that. You put me in supermax prison for 6 weeks for criticizing your handling of this fake pandemic. Didn't work. Did it. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do, everybody. Collectively together, we're going to do this. I'm meeting with a large group of people on Sunday. If anybody is in the city of Mississauga, Oakville, Brampton, Milton, surrounding areas, and you're interested in hearing what this private meeting is all about, email me, freedomreport.ca@gmail.com. I will tell you where we're all going to meet at 5 p.m. on Sunday night, but you're not going to know until about 25 to 30 minutes before. When we all get together, we are going to leave our phones in our car because the information that I'm going to be sharing with all of you is not for publication. It's not going to be telling you or encouraging you to break the law. But if I'm going to take a break from the public eye for that day. And we're going to have a real conversation where each and every one of you can speak to me in the same room at the same time and ask questions, and I will answer them all, every single one of them. there are citizens groups out there that are willing to fight back. You saw the protest that we had at Adamson's Barbecue. That's just the beginning. I'm going to be in Bolton tomorrow at 10 a.m. at Noble Toys on Queen Street. I don't know the address. I think it's 660 Queen Street South in Bolton, Ontario. A toy store is opening up his doors in defiance of this illegal shutdown. That is what I am going to be doing and talking about the illegality of all of this and encouraging those who run businesses to open them and to show them that there will be solidarity between we the people against our politicians. Now, prior to tonight's show, I chose to watch Jason Kenney, the current premier of the province of Alberta, answer questions. And he comes out and talks about the fact that we need to stop this virus. We need to make sure that no one else is going to get sick and that people are going to be on ventilators and so on. But he indirectly admitted to the fact that there are fewer sick people this year than there are any other year. It's true. Because people are being stuck at home, because you're being forced to do everything from your house, because you're forced to stick around your immediate neighborhood, fewer people are dying this year. Did you know that? Let me tell you why. Because there are fewer of you driving cars and getting into car accidents. True story. And because there are fewer cars on the road, there are fewer pedestrians being hit by cars. True story. And there are fewer of you walking up large flights of stairs to go to work or to go to the subway stations or the train stations or whatever it might be. So fewer people in fewer places where there are lots of stairs means fewer of you are falling down and dying from falling. True story. When you have everybody's lives interrupted, sure, there's going to be a big shift in the way society works. There's going to be a big shift in statistics. And fewer people have died on the average in 2020 than 2019. And it's not to do with the fact that anything else other than what I said contributing to that factor. So fewer people on the road, fewer people on the streets, fewer people falling downstairs, fewer people, I guess, in nightclubs, getting into fistfights and overdosing on drugs there and so on. But believe me, when I say this, the death count is going to go up because the depression is kicking in. You do not have to listen to what a politician says. There's not a single politician. There's not one city councillor in Ontario and not one mayor in Ontario who is a doctor. Not one. None of them have any credentials at all. And keep this in mind also that our prime minister is a drama teacher. That's his experience in life. And a ski instructor, part-time, not full-time, part-time. And our deputy prime minister is first off the granddaughter, literally the granddaughter of a pair of Nazis who killed Jews, and is a failed insurance broker and a failed business runner. She's a failure at everything she's done. That's who's in charge. That's who's telling you how to live. That's who's telling you what's going on medically within your country. These are the people telling you to wear a mask and telling store owners that they can't open their doors. I do see something wrong with all of that. I know you do too. So it's time for all of you to take the damn mask off. Don't put masks on kids. Every single city in Canada right now uses the word "you shall wear a mask" in their bylaws, which means it's optional. So when they say "you shall wear a mask," it means, do it if you want to, but they all have the same provisos, the same exemptions to not wear them, which means that if you are performing any athletic activity, you don't have to wear a mask. Walking is athletic. Now this here, you see this flashlight here that was given to me by that really cool guy, Streetsville Tire. Look, there's the logo right there. Hold on. There they go. Lifting this flashlight and turning it on burns calories. So it is an athletic activity. Dancing, yelling, talking like I'm doing now, having sex, riding a bike, working, like lifting up. If you're a waiter or a busboy and you're lifting up a tray of dishes, all of these things are athletic activity. So the section in the bylaw that might be number 2 in Toronto or 6 elsewhere, wherever it might be, that means you're exempt. No matter what you're doing that's physical, you are exempt. Even sitting down and doing nothing, because your heart rate is going and the respiratory system is going, you're burning calories. That's athletic activity. But they also say you have any underlying medical condition. So walk into a store without a mask, all of you, and just say medical, and you walk away. And those of those companies out there that will not let you shop or do otherwise, you contact me and we're going to sue them. I told you I'm suing that Muay Thai club out in Oakville, Milton Muay Thai, because he's in violation of 5 different codes, telling me that I had to wear a mask and then accusing me of being a racist and then shouting out, oh man, the guy's a fool. Longos is the other one. They're getting sued because they wouldn't let me shop, telling me that I had to social distance and then 5 of their staff surround me within 6 feet, actually closer, all to tell me that I had to leave. And I kept saying, no, I don't. I'm sorry, I don't. Well, they're getting sued. And so is a place in Georgetown. It's a secondhand store. They decide that they not only want to yell at me, telling me that I have to leave. The guy thought he was going to be clever and tell me that he had 3 members of his staff that all had medical conditions. Like, you can't speak for other people. That's against the privacy laws. You cannot tell me that people that you work with, that I can see working there, actually have medical conditions. It is against the law. So what's happened here is these crazy bylaws and this crazy notion of this false, fake, non-existent virus is turning all of you into police officers, I guess you think, or turning all of you into bylaw officers. If you do not work for the city in which you are trying to enforce this bylaw, you cannot enforce the bylaw. So don't even talk to me about a mask. Stop going, where's your mask, sir? I'm not interested, because now I'm raising my voice. And if you do not accept the word A, medical, and B, leave me alone, you're getting sued. It's that simple. Step within 6 feet of me, I'm calling 911. It's going to be that simple. I'm taking a stand. Just like Adamson's Barbecue, just like our amazing friend there, Christine Massey, is, just like all of you should, take a stand. So everybody who's interested in what is going to be said in this private grouping, and keep in mind, phones are not allowed. And before you can enter the building, you're going to be asked to leave your jacket and your phone in the car. I'm not going to search you and touch you and all that stuff. I'm going to ask you, leave it there, because the information that you're going to hear from me and 2 other phenomenal speakers is exactly what you need to hear. So if you want to be a part of that meeting, freedomreport.ca@gmail.com. But this week, coming up Monday all the way through Friday, I intend to go shopping with large groups of you. I want to have at least 20 people with me at various stores at various times. And we're all going to walk in. We're not going to have exemption cards and exemption buttons. We're just going to say medical. We're going to walk into these stores and we're all going to buy something. So bring $20 with you, because we'll buy some gum, or we will buy an apple, or 1 olive, or a jar of peanut butter and share the jar of peanut butter together. We're going to buy something, maybe a bag of chips, and all of you can put your hands in the same bag of chips and we can eat the chips 4 feet away from each other. How's that sound? So we're going to be customers. We're not going to go in there and be a pain in the ass. We will spend money in there. Even if it's only $3, we're going to spend it. So any of you who are interested in this, let me know. freedomreport.ca@gmail.com. Tell me who you are. Give me your email address. I'll throw you into my database there that I will then blast email out to all of you. Because we're going shopping, we're going to have fun. The idea is, this Christmas season, we're going to tell Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie to go to hell. And of course, all of City Council who agreed with her. We'll go to Brampton and do this. We'll go to Oakville and do this. Milton and do this. We'll go to Etobicoke and do this. We're going to take a stand. And I'm not doing this just for the idea of getting my face on camera. We're going to be doing this because we need to show the rest of the country that a group of 20 people can get noticed and can inspire others to make changes, just like Adam Skelly has inspired other shop owners out there to defy the illegal orders, be a human being, invite human beings into their shops and make money, which is what you're supposed to do in a capitalist society. So that's what I've got to say, everybody. freedomreport.ca@gmail.com. Some of your commentary there is, Kev, I noticed that your nose is bent. Yeah, Yeah, it's what happens when you break your nose three times, guys. So by all means, it's crooked. I know that it's crooked. Right? So I'm not sure if that's an insult or just a jab. I accept both with a smile. Also, remember, everybody, donate $20. Go to kevinjjohnston.ca. Donate $20. I'll give you both the ebook and the audiobook, the newest versions of both. I'll give them both to you, as well as Lacrosse is Dead. Both of these books, you'll get the ebook and the audiobook. They're both a lot of fun. Go to kevinjjohnston.ca. That's it right there. Donate $20 and I will send you all four digital files. That's $80 worth of digital content that you get for just the paltry $20, because we need these funds to continue doing what we do. Also, everybody, another quick announcement for you. I've got the interview booked. All right. We've got the studio time booked. I will be interviewing Ontario Premier Doug Ford's drug dealer. That's correct. His drug dealer is going to sit with me and we're going to have a 4-hour conversation. It's not going to be live. What it will be instead is a digital content download. All right. So we're going to have a lot of fun with this. Either way, I want to see you Sunday night. It's in Mississauga. I will tell you what the meeting place is via email. And this week, we're going to have ourselves some fun going out and shopping together without masks. Let's do this as a community. Let's have everybody out there enjoy their Christmas. And please do go to Christine's website. She gave you the website there. Follow her on Twitter. Just go back through this video. You can see what her Twitter account is. And give her your support. Tell her how much you love what she does, because I'll tell you, I love her for what she did tonight and all the other days, where she continues to tell you the truth about this fake pandemic. And that's exactly what it is. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. I love you all. My name is Kevin J. Johnston. You can always catch me at kevinjjohnston.ca. I am the next mayor of the city of Calgary. See you soon.